Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. Coming up after this brief break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw. WWE Raw was in Indianapolis, Indiana at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and this show featured the return of The Shield. We also found out that Bray Wyatt is apparently possessed by Sister Abigail something. I'm not quite sure, but we'll have a lot to talk about here before we get into it. I just want to note that, yes, this is late. Normally, I do these on Monday evening. A couple of things. Number one, I'm on Jim Ross's podcast. We recorded that after Raw last night, and that will be available later this evening, Tuesday evening. I believe it's 8 o'clock Central. Basically, when you're done with SmackDown, that will certainly be available at podcast1.com. Again, the Ross Report. We talked about a wide variety of subjects and really enjoyed the conversation. It's always an absolute honor and privilege to be on with Jim Ross, so please do check that out. And then the other reason is that, well, my Vikings played last night. And so even when I do JR's podcast, I usually stay up and bang this out. But it was going to be a late night. So here we are today. The other note coming up tomorrow on the All Access Daily Podcast, you will hear the Impact Wrestling Teleconference. And I believe it's Gail Kim. And the first 10 minutes of the show, I believe it is Josh Matthews talking about the new Global Wrestling Network, which Anthem unveiled today. It's official that Global Force now has its own streamings, or not Global Force, I guess it's a Global Wrestling Network, but it's back to Impact Wrestling, so Anthem has its own streaming service, and I'm looking forward to diving into that and seeing what's available and hearing what Josh Matthews has to say about it coming up on Wednesday. Again, that audio will be available right here on the All Access side at pwaudio.net. Let me get the business out of the way, and then we'll dive right in. If you are interested in membership to ProWrestling.net, well, number one, check out the Ross Report, because typically there I'll include a little something special for people. But membership rates are available on the main page of ProWrestling.net. Once you just click right into that sign-up area, and you'll see three different pricing options available. It is the ad-free version of the site. You hear the Raw audio reviews every week, SmackDown, NXT, ROH, Lucha Underground. I guess Impact Wrestling. I'm still struggling to remember what their name is this week. But all of those audio shows available. Plus, we do all the major pay-per-views. Jake Barnett and I got together for 70 minutes to discuss the WWE Hell in a Cell show the other night. And so much more. The .NET Weekly audio show. My Q&A audio show. Normally up on Mondays. Push back this week. That one will be available tomorrow. That was going to be replaced by ProWrestling.net Live. But with the roofers in my neighborhood yesterday, they were still doing a little bit of work overhead, so they did finish up my house. I do apologize if you're hearing any of the banging in the background. They are finished with my house, I believe, but they are working on the houses on a townhouse complex, and so they're working on those. And so there may be a little pounding. Not much I can do. Tried a different room, and it was actually louder there, so hopefully it's not coming through. But that's why everything was kind of pushed back a little bit as well. But with the business out of the way, let's get into Raw. Again, you know, this was the big Shield reunion, and I thought it came off very well received. And I thought it was a really cool touch. You know, I've talked about, and maybe this wasn't on the All Access side, but I remember talking with, I think, Jake Barnett about it, or maybe it was Will Pruitt, I don't remember, but we were talking about the Shield and how Minneapolis has, like, kind of this, you know, cool history with the Shield, because I guess it's not just history, but also coming up at TLC, we had the Elimination Chamber with the Shield against the Wyatt family at Target Center, and now we're getting the return of the Shield in a match at TLC. Indianapolis blows that away. There's something about Apolis that apparently appeals to the Shield. Indianapolis is where the Shield debuted. Indianapolis is where the Shield broke up. And Indianapolis is where the Shield reunited. So nice touch there. I did like that. Broadcast team for this show, as usual, Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Booker T. JoJo was the ring announcer, and they opened things up with a Miz TV segment. And this was basically Miz handing out Mizzies again. He did note that Bo Dallas was absent, the broadcast team, stating that he was ill. but also questioning whether it had something to do with the beatdown that Roman Reigns gave them the week before. The Mizzy stuff, I really enjoy a lot of the Miz's act, and by the time I'm done, you may be questioning whether how much I do, because I don't like him being in the TLC match, but we'll get to that. But I usually enjoy Miz's work, but this Mizzy thing is just kind of corny. It's a little too sappy for me. It's predictable. It's not all that fun. But I guess they killed a little bit of time with it. The Mizzies went to, well, one for Axel, one for Sheamus and Cesaro, who finished in a tie for something, and one for Miz. He's the guy now. He's the big dog because, he survived Roman Reigns last week, I guess, is the idea. And he mocked the idea. His guests were Sheamus and Cesaro, by the way. And they all kind of mocked the Shield. Miz was mocking the whole idea of the fans dreaming about a Shield reunion. They don't want any of this, he talked about, when it came to him and Sheamus and Cesaro. And Roman Reigns ended up coming out after Miz said that, he dedicated his own award that he gave himself to his future child and every child out there who needs a role model. And that's when Roman came out, and Cole said the rumors of Roman's demise have been greatly exaggerated. Oh, he's so fired up for Roman Reigns. Miz then mocked Roman for standing on the stage with his tail between his legs, even though there's four guys in the ring. And Reigns said this is where Miz shuts up. And Reigns gave them all one chance to get out of the ring. Miz mocked the idea of Reigns facing the four of them by himself. And Miz told Reigns to go back and get Ambrose and Rollins. And he said the rumors of a Shield reunion are what Roman is. Nothing but hype. And Roman responded, rumors? Who said anything about rumors? Dean Ambrose's music hit and the place came unglued. To the point that, well, in retrospect, they probably should have saved Dean Ambrose's music for last. I don't know, maybe it wouldn't have mattered, but Ambrose just gets mega pops usually, and certainly here. This was huge. He comes out, and then they play Seth Rollins' entrance music, and it wasn't, you know, the mega pop that Ambrose got, but the three of them together were certainly hot. And they walked in the ring, ended up clearing the heels from it, and I'm watching this going, oh man, this is the match we're supposed to be excited by when they just manhandled all three of their opponents. Well, there was more to come. But the Shield ended up... Miz took the Dirty Deeds finisher from Ambrose, and then they all picked him up and delivered the Shield powerbomb, and they did the Shield fist bump together as Roman's music, which was once the Shield music, played to end this segment. This was as hot as I've seen a live crowd for something on Raw in some time. They loved the idea of the Shield reuniting, and you know, they told a much better story, I felt, with Rollins and Ambrose reuniting. Just kind of the twists and turns there, will they or won't they, that sort of a thing. And they, you know, you're not going to be able to repeat the same story with Roman Reigns. And so you had to be different about it. I prefer the other story, but this was fine. The one thing I can't help but look back on and question, had they just turned Roman Reigns heel for a year? And I know everybody's, you know, when people talk about it all the time, hell, myself included, but if they had done that, number one, the fans would have been able to get the angst out of their system, and I think he would have been able to, I just would have been good for him. And then, at this time, you have Roman turning babyface to rejoin the Shield. You know, I think that would have been a huge moment. I think you could have had people clamoring for that, wanting to see Roman turn again, to become a babyface, to reunite with these guys. And I think you really could have built that up well. But what's done is done. This came off really hot, and the Shield are reunited. And we found out that, well, Cole questioned whether Sister Abigail is alive or not. And they went to a commercial break. SmackDown hype. Obviously, the fallout from the Sami Zayn situation with him pulling Kevin Owens out of Shane McMahon's path when it came to that off the top of the hell in a cell structure elbow drop. And then they also announced Baron Corbin against AJ Styles for the U.S. Championship. You can join Jake Barnett for live coverage of that show as it airs on USA Network, 7 Central, 8 Eastern Time. And the members will hear my audio review of that show exclusively later on this evening. In the opening match, it was Jason Jordan defeating Carl Anderson, who had Luke Gallows with him. I'm watching this going, man, you know, this crowd seems like they're nicer. They're more excited to see Jason Jordan than most places are. It's not, we haven't seen crowds really turn on him. I mean, maybe, you know, people here and there. But there's a lot of silence when Jason Jordan is out there. And this crowd was pretty into him. I'm like, hey, maybe he's turning the corner. And then I realized, oh, he went to Indiana University, and the show's in Indiana. And well, Indiana, some of the nicest people I've ever met, we're in Indiana, so maybe it's just a really nice crowd combined with Jordan going to Indiana. I'm not sure. I mean, we'll see if it continues. But I haven't seen anything leading up to this to make me think that, you know, that he's turned the corner basically. But he ended up winning with his pop-up neck breaker, so he goes over clean. I'm guessing this means that Jordan faces Luke Gallows next week, and it's kind of the way they do things. Then we saw Elias backstage, and Cole was all excited, saying he was going to debut a new song after the break, and they went to a commercial. When they came back, Miz was being tended to by a trainer, while Axel was holding his own ribs, yet holding an ice pack on Miz's neck, and Kurt Angle checked on Miz and told him he's getting what he wants, and he announced Miz, Cesaro, and Sheamus against The Shield in a TLC match at the TLC pay-per-view coming up. It's October 22nd, so a week from Sunday in Minneapolis. I am doubtful at this point for attending the show in person. It's my girlfriend's birthday weekend, and we've got all sorts of stuff planned, just not even for her birthday, but just you know, a little bit for her birthday, but a lot of stuff going on, and it might just be easier for me to cover that one at home, unfortunately. I think that I'm kind of leaving it up to her, so be mad at her. It's her, it's all right, I shouldn't throw her under the bus, but I did leave it up to her. It's her birthday. She's gone to the last couple. She's had a good time, but I think she's leaning against this one. So, and it might just be easier for me to cover that show, and then I can bang out the audio right after with Jake, like I normally do. But for locals who, I've had a couple people ask if I'm gonna and if I'm going to attend. Leaning against it right now, but you know, she may change her mind. We'll see. Then we ended up with Elias in the ring saying that it was an Indiana town on an Indiana night. Nice little Tom Petty reference there. And then he quickly turned on the fans and teased not performing for them. Of course, they cheered. And he said, just kidding. I like the sound of my own voice too much. I'm enjoying Elias. You know, the songs, a little repetitive. You know, I mean, you listen because there's usually a new insult for each city, you know, in there and everything like that. But I am enjoying him on the main roster so much more than I ever did in NXT. And he ended up being interrupted, though, by a banjo being played obnoxiously. And I don't know if there's another way to play a banjo. All right, yeah, there is. But in this case, it was Titus O'Neil playing it. And he asked, who wants to walk with Titus worldwide? And the crowd, like I say, Indiana, very nice people. They cheered. Titus sang and played the banjo poorly and asked how Elias would lose to Apollo Crews. And that's when Apollo made his entrance. And again, the very polite people of Indiana cheered. Elias defeated Apollo Crews. They joined the match in progress. He ended up winning with Drift Away. You know, not much to this, but I guess Elias's feud with Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil continues. And is Titus still with Akira Tozawa? He hasn't really been taking part in these Cruiserweight segments. That just kind of popped into my head, so thought I'd share. They showed us Enzo Amore backstage, and they went to a commercial break. He came out. Corey Graves made his Guns N' Roses reference of the week, God bless the man, by saying that Enzo is the living embodiment of what it feels like the morning after Night Train. Nice. Enzo delivered an in-ring promo calling out Kurt Angle, saying he wasn't doing anything important. Long story short on this, Enzo wasn't happy about Kalisto being awarded a title shot. And the fact that Kurt Angle hasn't been doing anything to enforce his no contact paperwork that he ended up signing. And so the idea was that Enzo was upset about Kalisto getting a title shot at TLC. Well, Angle rectified that. He explained that he signed Kalisto after he signed Miz's clause, so technically it didn't apply to Kalisto. And Enzo wasn't happy, accused Angle of hustling him, and Angle ended up booking Enzo and Kalisto for the Cruiserweight Championship for later in the show. And then Enzo said he's the realest champ in the room, and the only way he would defend the title is if it's in the main event. I'm like, oh man, you're going to tell this crowd that that's their main event of the show. And there were definitely some groans in the crowd. It wasn't like people were going, you know, were freaking out going, yes, we want this match. But Angle ended up shaking on it. And so they told viewers in the first hour of the show that that was the show's main event. They've kind of been coy about it the last couple of weeks, not, you know, I mean, you can kind of see it sneaking up, and eventually you figure out, like, wow, they're really going with the Cruiserweights in the main event segment, where this week they said something. It'll be interesting to see what the third hour number is. And it turned out to be a fun match. We'll get to it, obviously. But yeah, it's just those first two cruiserweight segments and the final segment on Raw for me, just it's not pushing me personally to want to watch 205 Live as much as it is making me feel like the third hour of Raw is a complete waste and people could go ahead and turn on football or whatever else, you know, whatever else they would watch, baseball at this time of year too, whatever you're in the mood for that doesn't pertain to Raw because they're doing so little there. And then we had the broadcast team talking behind their desk, and Braun Strowman was shown walking backstage, and Graves said Strowman would be in action after the break. When they came back, and it was Braun Strowman defeating Matt Hardy in 6 minutes and 30 seconds. There was a commercial break during the match, but I thought they gave Matt Hardy really more offense than I expected. You know, when I saw him come out, it's like, well, the brother's sideline. I mean, you knew Strowman was going to win, but it was just a question of how decisively. And I thought Matt got in more offense than a lot of guys have against Braun Strowman. You know, mostly punches. He went for a side effect. Strowman was able to toss him aside. Late in the match, though, he hit a twist of fate. And he went for a cover, but Strowman kicked out at 1, and the broadcast team really put that over big. And then Strowman ended up choke slamming Hardy and hitting his power slam for the win. And this was and 6 minutes and 30 seconds, and just, you know, it makes sense to have Strowman beat Matt Hardy, clearly, because Matt Hardy, tag team wrestler, won, tag team partner sidelined. You know, Jeff Hardy underwent his shoulder surgery last Tuesday. And so, you know, I mean, we'll see if Matt ends up being broken or woken or, you know, whatever they're going to go with. Corey Graves, for whatever it's worth, did say at one point that Matt has been in a delirious state of mind recently without his brother at his side. So I don't know if that's him just trying to fuel the speculation or if he's doing it, you know, if it's kind of something they have planned. Is they're working toward that? I'm not quite sure. Then we had Strowman attack Hardy after the match and put him up on his shoulders and carried him up the ramp. And I'm like, oh, okay, so is he going to take him backstage? Is he going to run him through like he did Hawkins? And I think the idea was that he was going to run him through the video wall like he did Curt Hawkins. But the Shield came out, and they were ready for this reunion because they already have new Shield t-shirts. They're blue, and, well, black shirts with the blue, and it's the three of them putting their arms together. You just see the arms. I've seen better wrestling t-shirts, but that's just me. I'm not a wrestling t-shirt guy anyway. Strowman ended up dropping Hardy and glared at the Shield, and he moved first. He was going to fight them all. He ended up grabbing Reigns by the neck and driving him back into that video wall. Rollins and Ambrose got involved and ended up, they outnumbered him, and Reigns speared Strowman, and then the Shield put the boots to him old school style. They cleared off the broadcast table on the stage and performed a triple power bomb that drove Strowman through that table, and he rolled to the floor, which is just off the stage. It's not that big drop that it once was, and the crowd was popping huge for this. I like this. I mean, I didn't expect to see the Shield work over a heel, you know, 3-on-1, but hey, if it's going to happen, Strowman's a guy. Plus, they were saving Matt Hardy. And so, yeah, I thought this was really good as well. They went to a commercial when they came back. Broadcast team, for the first of many, many, many times, was giving us a recap of what the Shield did. They wanted to make sure that if anyone was tuning in late, they were well aware of what the Shield did on this show, which is smart. And then the Shield were shown walking backstage when Charlie Caruso approached them. Rollins cut her off and said they're back and stronger than ever. Ambrose said they'll destroy everyone in their path, whether it's 3, 4, 5, or 6 guys. And Reigns said they are 3 workhorses who run the business now. And, you know, that last line, I'm like, man, yeah, that almost sounds heelish. That's not what they're going for. But, I mean, it did kind of make me think back to all the times I've said, man, if they reunited these guys, I know there's a lot of money to be made with them as baby faces, but damn, it would be fun if they came back as heels and just ran roughshod over the over Raw. And I've also said, you know, have them be the guys. And I said the same thing with AJ Styles, Karl Anderson, Luke Gallows at one point with the brand split. Have him ignored. Who's going to stop him? You know, that sort of a thing. And that way, if you have something hot, you can take it to both brands, at least temporarily, and have some fun with that and create some crossover. But it's just a pipe dream at this point. I guess we'll settle for the Shield being reunited as babyface. There's nothing wrong with that. Mickie James made her entrance. Mild reaction at best, I would say. She talked about how she didn't fit in backstage. You know, she just kind of felt like something was amiss. And she questioned whether it was the way she sings country music or that, you know, not the way, but that's because she sings country music, her accent, or her age. And she said the person that she has to thank for making her feel that way is Alexa Bliss, who talks behind her back. And she ended up telling her to put on her big girl pants. She said, "I don't play games, honey, because I am all woman. Can you say the same?" "I don't think so." She said age isn't anything but a number, and the only number she cares about is 7. Because she will become a 7-time WWE Women's Champion. Bliss came out, claimed she was sorry, then set up some old-school-looking video. You know, she was claiming she put this tribute video together as a way to apologize to James, and it was just a you know, really old-school black-and-white type thing playing on this whole joke that Mickie James is old and fragile at the ripe old age of 38. You know, because they would do this with all the male wrestlers who are 38, right? Bliss ended up laughing after the video played and said, "Isn't it past your bedtime, Grandma?" And she continued to tell age jokes, and James said she couldn't hear her, invited her to bring her biscuit butt to the ring. And there was a small biscuit butt chant. And then Bliss headed to the ring and turned around to leave, you know, kind of teasing that she was going to get in, but actually leaving. Well, James caught her and ended up working over at ringside, and Alexa ended up ducking Mickie James's big kick and retreated. So, yeah, I mean, it's solid hype for the pay-per-view match. I like seeing Mickie James positioned stronger than she was, certainly. I think this is probably just a one-off at the pay-per-view, and Alexa retains and moves on to other things, but it's still, you know, kind of enjoy it while it lasts kind of thing with Mickie James. They just haven't done a good job with her. And I'm still not big on the whole, all the age jokes, but I mean, technically, yes, it's coming from a heel and all of that, but again, it's just like, really, would this happen with a male wrestler who's 38? I don't think so. Then it was, we got a little hype for the main event, the Cruiserweight title match. Coming out of a commercial, we had an Asuka video that hyped her debut at TLC, and then Kurt Angle was acting all impressed by the video. And then he was there with backstage with Bayley and Sasha Banks. Bayley wanted to face Asuka. Sasha wanted to face Asuka. Alicia Fox entered the picture, and she goes way over the top with that crazy act that she does. There's sometimes she does it that the situation feels like it calls for it, and she plays it well, and there's other times where she just goes so over the top that it just completely takes me out of the moment watching this. Like, this is just corny. She was complaining about how she'd been in WWE for 10 years and still doesn't have a t-shirt. Then Dana Brooke showed up and said sometimes she feels like she doesn't even exist. Emma showed up, made her case. So they all want a match. They all want the match with Asuka, her debut at TLC. And Angle decided to book them all in a 5-way match with the winner getting that shot, not even a shot, but just a match with Asuka at TLC. And that would come up later on in the show. I don't know if they said elimination match here. There was certainly some confusion with Michael Cole. He acknowledged it later during the match that he didn't realize it was an elimination match. And I don't know that they... I'm not sure if Angle said that here. I know when the match started, I just thought it was a regular match too, but that may have been just because I was listening to Michael Cole. But we'll get to that. The fourth match was a Cruiserweight match. Brian Kendrick and Jack Gallagher beating Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali in 3:35. Gallagher a heel now. We're finally seeing him pop up on Raw with that heel persona. He wears his regular attire, so non-wrestling gear, when he's wrestling. And, you know, he and Kendrick together is kind of fun. But it just still had this feeling of a Cruiserweight match. There's still a lot of work to be done. Michael Cole questioned whether Sister Abigail is alive. And he said we may find out after the break. The Hispanic Heritage Month video went to the guy who yells, "Goal!" That guy. I think it's, is it Andres Cantor? Sorry, folks, not a big soccer guy. But certainly know of him and that call. I just don't know the guy's name. Then we had a shot of the exterior of Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and this is when Cole ran through the history of the Shield in the venue in Indianapolis. Getting together, breaking up, and getting back together, all in the same venue. Pretty cool. Top of the third hour, Kurt Angle was on the phone telling someone that TLC is going to be incredible, and that's when The Miz entered the picture and said that, you know, he, Sheamus, and Cesaro are happy to face the Shield as long as they're men of their word. Angle wasn't sure what he was talking about, and Miz recalled, I think it was Ambrose, saying that they'd face more than three men, And he said they wanted to add a partner. And Angle eventually agreed. I don't know why they just, I think Ambrose said up to six people. I just would have kept adding partners. But in this case, Miz introduced his partner as, well, the guy who came crashing through a door next to the interview set, Braun Strowman. And he stared at Angle, who sadly looked intimidated. I know he's a non-wrestler now, maybe. I mean, we'll see if he ever returns to the ring. He's also an Olympic champ. I don't know. I just, not saying that he should, like, stand up to him and act completely unintimidated, but just weird seeing Kurt Angle all of a sudden looking sheepish. But Miz smiled and pointed at Angle before making his exit. So Miz being pretty cocky about this. You know, and so it's official. It's a handicap match. It's a TLC match, tables, ladders, and chairs match, with the Shield facing Miz, Cesaro, Sheamus, and Strowman. I think they'd be better off just without Miz in this match for a couple of reasons. One, yeah, it's a handicap match, but I still, when I see Miz, even coming from somebody who likes him, I just like, oh, Miz is the weak link here, and he's probably going to lose, that sort of thing. And I'm not saying he's going to do a bad job. You know, I think he'll be fun trying to escape the carnage and things like that. The other reason, though, is when you look at the TLC lineup, right now there's only room for two title matches. The women's title match, which is officially announced, Mickie James challenging Alexa Bliss, and the Cruiserweight Championship match, which they haven't announced. I'm guessing it's probably a rematch with Enzo and Kalisto, but don't know. But I assume we'll get a Cruiserweight match on the show, or title match on the show. And then you have the Intercontinental Championship match, or Intercontinental Champion tied up in the main event. And you have the Tag Champs tied up in the main event. Brock Lesnar, even though the show's in Minneapolis and his history here, not advertised for the show. And so, I mean, they added Strowman even though he wasn't advertised, but I don't think they're going to do the same with Brock Lesnar. So it's, could they come up with some weird way of putting these, tag titles and Intercontinental titles on the line, or the Intercontinental title on the line in the TLC match? I guess. I hope they don't. I mean, what did the Shield offer up in return? They could do it, but it just kind of feels like right now it's a show with only two title matches. And granted, it's all about the Shield reunion. That's what's going to carry the show. But I just think that main event match is stronger without Miz, and from a perception standpoint, I really think the casual viewer is just going to look at him and think, well, if someone's going to lose on that team, it's going to be him. It's too bad. I just think there's Strowman, Cesaro, Sheamus feel stronger to me than the four-man team, so that's just me. We'll see. I think Miz can do a good job within the match, but I think it, and so much of this, obviously, again, is about the Shield reuniting, not as much about who they face, but really happy it didn't turn out to be Miz Taraj, because that one, as I've said, that one screamed Miz and R-Truth teaming up to face The Rock and John Cena, and it just, didn't catch on. It was all about Rock teaming with Cena, but the opponents were just so, it's like at the time, like nobody wanted to see that. And say so it's just, you had to have something on the other side, a little stronger than what they did. Finn Balor made his entrance while Michael Cole was questioning whether Balor would meet Sister Abigail. And Balor ended up saying Wyatt introduced the world to Sister Abigail. And he said he doesn't even know what to say anymore. He said Wyatt is like a virus that keeps mutating with more lies and mind games. And he said Bray is desperate for attention and to instill fear and to have WWE fans listen to his garbage. He says, Bray, I'm not afraid of you. And he said that if it was Sister Abigail, then bring her on. Remember that, because Finn's the guy who doesn't fall for Bray's crap. I think he did kind of freeze in his tracks when Bray did the crab walk like everyone else seems to, which I never quite understood. Like, you see it on TV all the time. It's just not that big of a thing. But anyway, the Wyatt video flashes. There's an empty rocking chair sitting there rocking. Bray sits down in the chair, and he talked about how Balor may not be afraid of him, but he will be afraid of her. And Wyatt said when she was young and beautiful and knew the truth, they feared her and turned her into a monster. And he was there when she took her final breath. So I guess this does mean that Sister Abigail is no longer with us. And he said that she's here. And then he morphed into that zombie thing, which is Sister Abigail. I didn't make that connection. I just thought they were doing some goofy special effects thing. His voice changes. It sounds, a little more high-pitched and feminine. And so the idea is that Sister Abigail is now talking through Bray Wyatt when he goes into this mode. And I'm not kidding you. And so she's speaking through him about Wyatt being different and special and how he wouldn't have heard a fly back in the day and all this stuff. And he said that, she said that she is rising from the ashes to fulfill the promise of always being by his side. And she said she is worse than anything that Finn Balor's world has ever dreamed of. Her touch could have saved Balor, but her kiss will burn it to the ground. And then Abigail laughed maniacally and morphed back into Bray Wyatt. And he just continued to laugh. This is so hokey. And I'm just like, okay, well, at least Balor's just going to call this for what it is. It's like, okay, parlor tricks, production, video production tricks, all of that. No, we'll get to that. They went to a commercial break coming out of it. They did the breast cancer charity video. And then in the fifth match, it was the women's match, the five-way elimination. It was Emma beating Sasha Banks, Bayley, Alicia Fox, and Dana Brooke. This was fine. I mean, I think they picked the right person. I think they want to save Asuka matches with Sasha Banks and Bayley for down the road rather than doing it in her debut match. I think Emma, when you kind of look at it from that perspective, then you're left with Emma, Fox, Brooke. And I think Emma's the one most likely to have a good, solid match, play her part well. I mean, I assume that Asuka just kind of plows right through her. But as far as like playing her, holding up her end of things, I think Emma's the more reliable of the three. You can make a case for Fox, but I would have Emma in that position. So I think they made the right call here. And she ended up kind of stealing a pin because Banks had performed a backstabber and put Fox in the bank statement for the tap out win. And when she got up, Emma rolled her up. It was Sasha, that is, and pinned her. And so she goes over. And so it will be Emma and Asuka at TLC. Into the final half hour of the show we went, coming out of a commercial break, with Finn Balor being interviewed by Renee Young backstage. Remember Balor? He's not buying it. He sees through Bray. It's all, mind games and all this. Well, he says that he fears that Bray may have unleashed something awful. Oh, my God. When she spoke, I heard her words echo through my head. I felt a shiver up and down my spine. It felt pure evil, but I also felt that now I know what I have to do. Like, go back to New Japan? Oh, my Lord. Balor's been the guy seeing through Bray's crap, not buying, the light tricks and all the things that Bray Wyatt does, and it's, like, been kind of nice. It's like, okay, this is going to kind of force them to do something different with Bray Wyatt, too. It's nice that, Finn Balor's not the usual gullible guy that everyone else has to play for Bray. But, again, this is going to make them kind of change the way they do some things with Bray. I didn't see this coming. I was kind of hoping for more of a change where they get rid of some of the, like, the crab walk. That, it's like, all right, we've all seen it. It's not that scary. It's the first time, sure. And then, you're caught off guard by it. And then all these years later, these guys still act just stunned by, and just frozen in their tracks when he does this. But, the lights out, lights, that gimmick, all that stuff was like, well, maybe they're going to, change. And instead, they go with Norman Bates, and Norma is now speaking through Norman. Jim Ross and I talk about that on the Ross Report podcast. We both enjoyed the Bates Motel show. Well, I know I did. I think JR did, too. It sounded like he watched it all. So you can hear more on that. But, yeah, I just, so now Balor is buying into this, and it's just, I'm sorry, is this going to be something that everyone hates? No, there's going to be defenders of stuff like this. I just find it to be too hokey for WWE television. I'm not, and yes, we've seen, some weird things with Undertaker and Kane over the years and all of that. I get it. Not all of it has been for me. And so just my personal taste is that this is too much. This is sappy. This is just, creatively, I mentioned last night, just like whoever's coming up with this material, let them write a horror movie for WWE Studios so they can get this out of their system and get back to writing pro wrestling, because this isn't the pro wrestling I know. And I know it's sports entertainment. It's WWE. It's just too corny for me. But I don't get the sense that it's clicking. We'll see. You know, you got to keep an open mind, I guess. But out of the gate, I'm just like, this doesn't work for me in any way. Then we had the broadcast team recap the Shield's actions again, and they announced Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman in a cage match for next week. No word on whether it will be a Falls Count Anywhere cage match. I'm guessing not. But no, it's that's a big match that they're, you know, advertising for next week's show. It'll be interesting to see. Does that close the show? Do they want? I would actually. Yeah, you may miss out on some viewers, but I think it's time to reestablish that third hour of Raw means something. You know, even if you're going to, even if there's going to be more weeks that you load up the first 2 hours more so than you do the third hour, I still think it's important to send the message that, hey, you know, you got to keep an eye on what happens on Raw. And they kind of did that with the main event of this show, too. You want people to stick around for 3 hours. You don't want to give them the perception that, yeah, once you get through whatever the second hour main event is, it's okay to go away. If there's anything, you know, anything that surprises you, well, it'll be on YouTube in the morning or whatever. You know, however people are looking at this. But, I mean, wouldn't surprise me at all if they do this at the start of the show. I would think like probably more like the second hour main event, but we'll see how they place that. Charlie Caruso interviewed Kalisto. He ended up getting no reaction from the crowd when he was introduced backstage, and he once again reverted to talking about how Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero are his idols, and they inspired him to make his dream a reality, and he said Enzo is a slap to the face of everyone before him, and he said he hopes that he can make Mysterio, Guerrero, and the WWE Universe proud. Well, that problem is he forgot to say proud. He just said he hopes he can make Mysterio, Guerrero, and the WWE Universe proud. When I become the new Cruiserweight Champion, Michael Cole did kind of fill it in for him in a way that were, you know, he made sure he filled in what he was saying, but he didn't call him out as he would like a Booker T in that situation or something. I like Kalisto. As far as his in-ring ability is concerned, I think he has a cool look to him. But this is what they do with him. It's, you know, you hear more, more of his promos include references to Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio than don't. And you know, hey, if you want, I think it's cool you try to make a connection there. I get it. And even if he's being 100% sincere, I don't think that you're going to, you look through history and the guys who are stars aren't spending their time talking about the guys they liked in every promo. You know, it's like this guy needs to establish himself. And so I assume this stuff is being written for him. And maybe, okay, on this night you want to do it one more time, fine, but can we move on from here? I'm not saying never pay, you know, proper tribute to Rey and Eddie. It's not that. It's just, Kalisto needs to get over on his own, not trying to kind of cling to the legacy of both of these men. It is worth noting, though, that they said that Monday was the day Eddie Guerrero was born as well. So I guess if you're going to do it, fine. But I guess I would have played on that. Instead of bringing up Rey 2, maybe just talk about it. Have Kalisto talk about it being Eddie's birthday, and that would have been more of a, it would have felt a little more natural to work it in there rather than kind of forcing it like they always seem to with the Mysterio and Eddie references from Kalisto. They had some cruiserweight introductions. They were the Lumberjacks going into a commercial break. Cedric Alexander, fine. Akira Tozawa, fine. Tony Nese, the guy that they show losing constantly. Like, of all the cruiserweights, Nese was one of them that you're like, oh, we need to televise his entrance. Again, nothing against Tony Nese, but he's just been branded as a glorified enhancement wrestler, and so that was a little bit odd. Rich Swann was out next. Then they went to a commercial when they came back. Graves hyped Rich Swann against TJP for 205 Live. Hey, I'm sure they'll have a fine match. It's just a lot of these guys are so damaged, and they've given away, you know, so many different matchups on the show that when you announce this, like if somebody's watching 205 Live and they're into it, they're probably going to like that. If you are not paying attention to the show, I don't know if another Rich Swann TJP match is going to make you go, ooh, I got to see this. It's too bad. I mean, there's just, like I say, there's a lot of work left to be done. Then when they came back from the break, all the other cruiserweights were at ringside. I don't think Neville was there. He may have been the exception. But in the sixth match, and they were, again, all there as Lumberjacks, it was Kalisto defeating Enzo Amore in 1435 to win the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. This was very poorly received by the live crowd to begin with, you know, initially early in the match. Things changed when Kalisto caught Enzo on the ropes and ended up suplexing him, not into the ring, but out of the ring and onto a pile of the other lumberjacks, the other cruiserweights who were fighting amongst themselves at ringside. That was cool, and it looked fairly safe, you know, with so many people there to break their fall. It looked really good, and from that point, the crowd was really into it. It was very comical. They cut to a shot of a fan who was chanting, "Holy shit!" And that caught on. You know, there was I don't remember the last time we've heard a "Holy shit!" chant during a cruiserweight match on Raw, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. But then we ended up with a brief "This is awesome" chant, for all because of that big spot that they did. That woke up the crowd, and that was cool. It was nice to see. And because it really was flat. Hey, put yourself in their position. You go to Raw, what's the main event going to be, you think, and that sort of thing. And it turns out to be Enzo Amore and Kalisto, or just Enzo Amore doing insult comedy on the rest of them. In the last few weeks, I felt bad for those crowds. But in this case, it worked out to be that they've done three of these Raw main event segments involving the cruiserweights. This was by far the best one. Kalisto ended up taking the, I don't know what Enzo calls Eat Defeat. It's the move that Gail Kim uses in Impact Wrestling. And he ended up having, he had Kalisto pinned, but Mustafa Ali, who had taken a cheap shot, Enzo had taken a cheap shot at him earlier, ended up pulling Enzo to ringside as a revenge to break up the pin. Enzo was barking at Ali and clotheslined him, and then he tripped up Kalisto on the ropes. They fought on the ropes. Kalisto ended up hitting a sweet-looking Salida del Sol from the top rope and then covered Enzo and got the win, and it was well-received. So again, that one big spot kind of changed things and took this from being a really flat match that people didn't want to see in the main event, clearly, and turn this into, hey, this isn't so bad, this is fun. And so, what a good time for it with the Cruiserweight title change. Now, again, the question is this going to be enough to make people want to watch 205 Live or pay more attention to those Cruiserweight segments on Raw? Only time will tell. It's a very damaged division. I think Neville, Kalisto, Enzo are the guys that I think people are going to. And Kalisto's a guy that's lost countless matches on the main roster, so they're rebuilding him. But those are the three that I think people are probably going to be the most open to, because the rest of the guys have just been so damaged through no fault of their own. Jack Gallagher did some really good things there, and he was a lot of fun to watch, and still is, but he's a guy that, and it's just they've all been kind of lumped in now in all of these segments, whether they're lumberjacks or just standing there taking Enzo insult humor. They just feel like the other guys. And so, yeah, they may have a little something going with the main event picture, maybe, by 205 Live standards they do, but I'm not going to say that it's hot and people are excited, but we'll see what the follow-up is, not just on 205 Live, but I think really the key is on next week's Raw. Do they find a way to keep this fresh? Is this the end of the Cruiserweights in the main event segment on Raw now that Enzo dropped the title? Not sure, and so some questions to be asked here, but a fun match. That big spot was really a momentum turner and a good end to the show, which I did not expect to be saying when I saw that it was going to be Kalisto and Enzo headlining Raw. And it's just that crowd's flat reaction with some groans when that match was announced. So overall, a pretty good show. WWE still has a lot of work to do, though. We only have one more Raw before the TLC pay-per-view, and as of this update, there's only three matches advertised. I assume we're getting Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt, and I just don't know the stipulation of that. Probably get a cruiserweight match. Maybe that's where they do the Kalisto and Enzo rematch. That would be my guess. Is Enzo going to lobby for the main event of that show? That would actually be comical. I hope they do. I hope that he demands that he gets the main event and doesn't get it. But, and then what? It's Samoa Joe is advertised on the live events page and on the Target Center website, so he should be back. No idea who he faces. I was beginning to wonder if it was going to be Braun Strowman, simply because Strowman looked like he was on the outside of the main event looking in, but now that he's there, again, no Intercontinental or Raw tag title matches, presumably. So, you've got so many people tied up in this main event. No Brock Lesnar advertised, and I don't expect that to change. You know, and so I'm not quite sure how they're going to fill out the remainder of this Raw brand pay-per-view coming up here again a week from Sunday. So we'll see. I mean, they may announce some things online, but next Monday should be interesting as they try to fill this out. I guess maybe Elias and either Titus or Apollo again, maybe as the kickoff show match. I'm not sure. Only three matches advertised. And obviously they're banking on the Shield reunion being the thing that hooks people on this show. And I think that's a pretty wise thing to bank on. I think people were really into that on Monday in this crowd. And so I thought that came off very well. That's going to do it for today, everybody. Hey, please take a moment, subscribe to our podcast, rate and review us on iTunes. I know everybody says it, and that's because it's so helpful when you take that moment just to give a quick rating. If you want to add some comments, awesome. And I check them out. It helps. It lets me know. What do you guys want more of? That sort of thing. Don't be afraid to sound off. For that matter, you can always email me, dotnetjason@gmail.com, dotnetjason@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter. Let me know there, @ProWrestlingNet. And please check out the Ross Report podcast at podcast1.com this evening, Tuesday evening. It will be available as I am the guest of Jim Ross, and we talk about Hell in a Cell, a little bit about Raw, a little NWA, MLW. Man, we've covered a lot of ground. Ring of Honor, if I didn't say that. So yeah, there's a mostly WWE talk, but then we kind of went a little into a lot of different subjects at the end, including some questions that JR's listeners sent in. And I know he likes it when I remind you guys, hey, give him a rating and review on iTunes or anywhere else that takes those reviews as well. It definitely helps us both out. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow, the Impact Wrestling, I'll get it right one of these times, teleconference with Gail Kim, but also including the first 10 minutes with an update from Josh Matthews regarding the new Global Wrestling Network, the streaming service that was unveiled today. So it should be an interesting call. I'm looking forward to it. We'll have that audio available for you at midday. I think it starts at noon Central, and they usually go for 40, 45 minutes or so. We'll have it up shortly after that. So I'm guessing roughly 2 Eastern, 1 Central is when you'll hear that audio. So until then, take care.